But I believe that God is the father of all of his children, right? And so that includes everyone on the face of the planet. And so when you get together with people of your own faith or other faiths, I can just feel God kind of smiling on us together. He loves that.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us to listen, learn, and be amazed. Today on In Good Faith, we actually get to the heart of our mission, which is to speak about interfaith relationships and to learn from people of different faiths. I'm in studio with senior producer Heather Bigley.
Hello.
And this was really interesting, I think, to sit around with some faculty and some students from the university who have not only learned about different faiths, but actually part of their program seems to be to actively go out and create and then fulfill a project.
Yeah, how gratifying to see on the campus of Brigham Young University an organization that wants to make positive change in concrete ways by working with other interfaith groups. It was a delight to talk to these folks.
We are going to talk with two professors at BYU, as well as three students that worked on two different projects. One, Caitlin Bauer, who is studying international relations, is the co-president of the Interfaith Student Association and participated in Boise in an interfaith activity that we're going to hear about, alleviating poverty through service. We're going to talk to Janae Wright, and Janae was one of those who was at the Wolf Institute and actually served there as an intern. She actually worked with Emma and Esther, our previous guests, plus Grace Chipman from Canada. She's a history major. All three of these students, yes. I was delighted to learn from them. I wish I'd been anything like them in my student days. The two professors are Andrew Reed, Associate Professor of Church History and Doctrine and founder of the BYU Interfaith Student Association, and Dr. Mike McKay, Associate Professor of World Religion and Faculty Advisor. And I started by asking Dr. Andy Reed, how did the organization get started?
Predecessor to the Council for Interfaith Engagement was the Religious Outreach Council. And we had a discussion on that council with a number of professors thinking about, you know, as a council at a university, we ought to be working with students, and we didn't have an arm for doing that at that time. So we put out a call to students just across the university and said, we're going to get together, we're going to have a conversation, see if there's interest in creating some kind of club or a student association. The first meeting we had in February of that year, we opened it up to students. We had about 45 students show up, and there was some kind of immediate interest among the students thinking about, at BYU, very, very small percentage of our students are from other traditions. And so we wanted to kind of think about how do we reach them, those students specifically, but also how do we help students who come from the religious majority at this university learn how to engage, talk with, think about the needs of those students and better understand the traditions they come from. And so the Student Interfaith Club started and eventually became a student association.
Grace, I wonder, because you're a senior, so yes. You've had some years here, what drew you?
So I originally took Dr. Reed's interfaith class, and it was just really inspiring to learn about a lot of different faiths. But I also, growing up in Canada, knew a lot of kids at my school and just in my community, people of different faiths. And I often had violin recitals at the Catholic Church or at our church building in Canada. We would have the Islamic mosque close. They would have people come pray at our chapel for Ramadan because they didn't have enough room in their mosque. So I was able to interact with people of many different faiths. And I found that I could be inspired by other people's faiths. And when I took the class and learned more about it, I saw that I could see truth in so many different things and that my own faith could be bolstered through that of others.
And Mike McKay, why in a religiously sponsored university like Brigham Young University is that concept of studying world religion so important?
I think so. World religions in the religious education department or college is one of the most sought after classes that isn't required. So it's an elective. And so we get a lot of students who are really interested. And part of the reason they're interested is in a globalized world, it's demanding a kind of response from them, one that maybe when this world was smaller, when you could exist in a much smaller space, maybe there wasn't as much pressure there. But I think right now they are sincerely asking the question is, how do I be a good person in the world? And to be a good person in the world, can I be the best kind of person through some religious literacy? And I think the outcome of those classes are students are becoming better Latter-day Saints by becoming connected. Instead of rejecting those who are not part of the religion, embracing them as partners has created a space for them to be as the best person they can be.
So, Janae, you must have some expectation for a world's religion class. What did you expect and what surprised you?
I went to a Catholic high school, and that's what drew me to this Interfaith Student Association. It's what drew me into the class. I was surprised, I suppose, by how much richness there is existing in other faith traditions. There were more people that I could make connections with and to move beyond my own faith tradition in order to create friendships. But I suppose that the thing that was most surprising was how much richness there is, how many similarities, but how many differences. But not only are there so many differences that exist, but I can value those differences as well.
Did that affect your own faith in any way?
Yes. It required that I develop faith in the more true sense, which is that I have all of these beliefs and I've chosen my own religious tradition because I have these beliefs. But I have some serious limitations into my own worldview. And so learning about other people's perspectives, learning about their worldviews, helped me to become a more cooperative person. And as a result, my own faith became more rich as well.
Well, I would love to jump right into this practical application because you seem determined to take this out of the classroom, Dr. Reed.
Yeah, the students that are taking these world religions classes that are in our interfaith leadership class, they're looking for application. Mike and I have spent too much time probably thinking about how do you do this and how do we make that happen. And we were teaching this interfaith leadership class just for the first time this last winter. And we sort of turned it over to the students and said, we have this idea. We want to find a project that we can directly apply what we're talking about in class. And then we sort of turned it to them and said, where are we going to go? What are we going to think about? What are we going to work on? How are we going to pay for it? And our students—
This was a lot to throw on the students.
It was.
It was
great.
A lot.
talk about faith, right? We have pretty amazing students, but we sort of just turned it to them and said, you know, you've developed a set of skills as leaders. You've learned to think about these things. You have the right questions. Now, can you do something with it? And for a religious community, we're trying to figure out how can we have an impact on the world? This project that where we took students to Boise, but also having students in England through the Wolf Institute, those have been ways in which students have applied what they're learning and had a kind of hands-on experience.
Caitlin, tell me about the planning then.
It was kind of daunting at the beginning because Mike and Andy walked in and were like, hey, we have this idea to go to Boise, figure it out. And it's me and like 25 other students. But it was a really cool process to sit down and think about, okay, if we want to go to Boise, who do we want to work with? And looking at Native American populations and other Christian faiths and Muslim organizations and Hindu organizations and starting to group it off and be like, okay, you three over here, you're going to take the mosque, try and reach out to them and see what we can do with them. You three over here, you're going to talk to the Native American population, see how we can work with them. Some of those things that we planned at the beginning didn't pan out. But we were able to go and serve with a lot of people that I'd written little papers about. Like it was really cool to help plan it and then see it come together in real life.
So it was a big offer of service or working together with them on a project they perceived as a community need.
Yeah, so we decided that we wanted to work with other faiths on homelessness because Boise has one of the largest populations of people without homes. We reached out to faith groups that were working in the area in that sphere and said, hey, we've got 10 BYU students and some professors. We want to be hands to do your work. And we want to learn how you do your work and why you do your work.
So you get there, you show up. What do we do now?
It was a lot of different things. We worked in homeless shelters. We sorted clothes. We talked with people that were homeless and learned their stories. We went to like 8 different church services on a Sunday. I felt like I was done with church for like a year. we learned a lot of different things and we saw a lot of different things.
It's really busy. You're trying to fit a lot in. Mm-hmm. Are there one or two things that really made the biggest impact on you or really touched you?
One of the things that I really loved was experiencing genuine faith from others. Like the first day we got there, we went to a Shabbat service with the local Reformed Jewish population. And just being able to sit through that service and participate in it was so profound for me from a Christian background that, you know, heralds back to sort of that Abrahamic tradition and seeing how many similarities there were, but also how many differences I could learn from. I think that helped strengthen my faith a lot and helped connect me with my Savior a lot more. But then also one of the things I loved doing was just getting my hands dirty. We went up to McCall, Idaho, and we helped weed some people's garden plots that they'd been given by this local food pantry. And we spent so long and I got so sunburned, but it just felt really good.
Says the redhead.
Yeah, it was bad. I forgot sunscreen. But I was literally like digging in the dirt to help these people in this effort to support themselves with this local garden. And so that was also really impactful for me.
And I wonder if I could ask you, Grace, you're a history major.
Yes.
And the history of humanity has lots of good, lots of bad. How does this fit?
So my research, a lot of what I do is women's history, but particularly women's religious history and how they've been involved politically. So I've done a few different projects. I did one with the Special Collections as a research fellow looking at LDS women and their opposition of the Equal Rights Amendment and how they could still fit in with the feminist movement. And then while I was in Cambridge, I was able to go for a few days into London and do some research at the London School of Economics on women's suffrage and how the women's suffrage movement actually had a lot of interfaith involvement, which I thought was interesting. I found a lot of documents about how there were these days of a call to prayer and women at the synagogues and women at the Catholic Church and Anglican churches were all praying on the same day. And so I think interfaith to me is that even though there's been lots of divisions over religion, if we really look, we can see that there's also ways that people can connect as well, which can also apply to our day to day. So I think I've found that really interesting, looking for the hope and how we can be united in our spirituality and how there's political movements that can bring us together, but also like what we're doing in Interfaith Club of finding ways to help in our community and finding historical ways that can apply to now of how interfaith work is so powerful in doing good and helping people and forwarding human rights as well.
You're listening to In Good Faith. We'll be back in a moment with more of our interview with BYU students involved in the Interfaith Student Association.
Hi, this is Stephen Cap Perry, and I'd love to recommend one of our BYU Radio family of podcasts for you. It's called The Appleseed. It's filled with stories for you and your family. Every episode features really excellent, nationally known storytellers sharing all kinds of folk tales, fairy tales, personal and family stories. It's great to put on and listen to for road trips or bedtime for kids or anytime you want something to get the whole family not only listening, but then those stories generate conversations. And it's so easy to say, hey, do you have a story about this? Or, oh, that reminds me of when grandma said, or whatever it might be. Check out the Appleseed podcast. You'll have fun and you might learn some new stories from your own family members.
Welcome back to In Good Faith. We're talking with members and faculty members of the Interfaith Student Association here at Brigham Young University on their experiences both here domestically and abroad.
I'm wondering, Mike, in projects like this, outside of the classroom, how do you measure if it was a success?
One of the things that we decided was that we were going to get out in the community and we're going to make a difference in the community with other people who are of other faiths. And so as part of that, we started learning a lot from like Catholic community services. So we started serving in local food kitchens, and that was a major part of the class. That was one of the activities that we would determine whether they were doing good or not, or whether we were accomplishing our goals. And so as we went out into that community, we did realize that we didn't have all the tools we needed. Like we wanted to do a lot more, and we were trying to do more. Like we even did a donation drive, and we served. And we had over 700 hours of community service just from that church. And that came from the leadership of the students. The students weren't doing those hours. They were enabling others to do those hours. And so that was a major part. We were trying to create leaders and form a kind of ethic, an interfaith ethic that gave them the tools to be those leaders. And so one was we were trying to figure out what it was like to do this in our own community. And then the Boise trip was a way for us to learn from people who knew how to do it better than us. And we went there, and we've learned so much that we're now applying that. Now, the Interfaith Student Club is still doing that service. We plan on 2,000 hours. We're hoping for a lot more this semester. And so it's our leaders who've developed a kind of ethic that will change the world in their own lives. And so I guess the success is coming from this wasn't just a class. This was a culture that is being developed at BYU by the students, through the students. And I think this semester is the sign of success. It hasn't collapsed.
It's expanded. We hope it's not collapsing.
Yeah, but that's the thing you hear sometimes about, and this is said sometimes disparagingly, but voyeuristic, like you're on safari and you get this service opportunity and then you go back to your five-star hotel and it's sort of like drop-in service. But it sounds like you're trying, when you talk about developing an ethic, how does this continue on what you've learned? Caitlin, I'm wondering about your thoughts.
The biggest thing for me has been that we went to Boise, we learned from people, like Mike said, that know way more than we do. And then we've come back and we've tried to apply that. So in our presidency meetings and things like that for the Interfaith Student Association, we're talking about, okay, how can we work with the groups in our area like this group did in Boise? Or how can we apply this thing that we learned in Boise to the service that we want to do? Or how can we find a way to do with our club what we saw someone do in Boise that we see isn't being done here? And so thinking about that homelessness aspect, like there's a really large portion of the BYU student body that is homeless. They sleep in their cars and come to school every day. And so how can we serve them? How can we start in our community and work with people of all faiths, both on campus and off, to serve those people who are experiencing homelessness? And so those are the kind of initiatives that we're continuing on from Boise while adding on to those things that we've already established, like Catholic community services and other service opportunities.
Grace, what do you think?
I think what's key to interfaith work, and we discuss it a lot, is yes, it's the projects, and the projects are important, but the projects aren't successful unless a connection is made. That there has to be that opportunity to connect with people. And I think Janae and I found that when we were in Cambridge, when we were touring mosques or different Anglican religious services, that opportunity to connect with people and to know the other, someone you didn't know before, that's what keeps interfaith work going. And I think that's what helps us when we do it. And that's what's so powerful is the way that we've been influenced and how our lives have been made better and our faith has been strengthened through interfaith work. So if we don't make those connections with one another, those human connections, then that's not really interfaith work.
Amen.
You said something important about your faith was strengthened.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Interfaith work has been so powerful for me within my own faith. And I think distinctively when we were in Cambridge in our program, I think of, and I can find this truth everywhere, but this is where my identity lies as well. And I think it's just so powerful to see the other ways that people connect with God and how they have, their lives have been improved because of it and how they overcome their challenges through faith. And that's inspired me. And I think it's so powerful that I can go to my own sacrament service and feel that connection, but that I can be in St. Paul's Cathedral and be so overcome with emotion by the choirs or the service. And I just think that that's what's powerful about interfaith work is that we can see God everywhere. And that's being able to find the Spirit in all things is, I think, what is, that's what God asks us to do. And that's what I've found through my interfaith work.
I love that. Did any of you have any trepidation or fear or discomfort at, I'm going into all these different places of worship I haven't been before?
I definitely did when I first started doing interfaith work. I had a class on the history of Christianity, and one of our assignments was to go to either an Orthodox service or a Catholic service. And so I drove up to Salt Lake by myself, and I went, and I was really nervous. But I think the more times I went and the more services I went to, I became more comfortable. I think even sometimes my family is a little surprised at how many different faiths and services I go to. And it's not an indication of any bad feelings towards my own, but that I'm trying to connect with God even more.
talking to my professors about kind of what the expectation was, or, you know, what I could or couldn't do at certain things or and at certain points was helpful beforehand. So a good old Google search will do the trick. But I also think that most of the time, religious people are very, very welcoming. That's the only thing I've ever experienced, is walking in somewhere and having someone be like, oh my gosh, welcome, right? What's your name? Where are you from? Like, why are you here? Please come sit with me, right? And I think that that is, that's the general.
You sort of feel that tension melt away a little.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, someone can guide me through this.
Yeah, and it's normally the really sweet old ladies that'll come up to you. And so it just feels like you get an extra grandma, which is awesome. But I believe that God is the father of all of his children, right? And so that includes everyone on the face of the planet. And so when you get together with people of your own faith or other faiths, I can just feel God kind of smiling on us together. He loves that.
What about you, Janae?
I'm in total agreement with Kaylin that compassion and love and hospitality, these things tend to be the meeting point of most religious communities that I can think of. And when we talk about interfaith relationships and this ethic we're trying to live out, a huge part of that is learning to develop a proper disposition towards other people who are different, who have different beliefs, who belong to a different religious tradition. And that might be uncomfortable at times, but it's really just about viewing them in a respectful way and being open to the value that they have to bring to the table. And when you have that sort of disposition, almost all the time, your conversation is going to be one of goodwill and love. That's like the important thing to remember, that it may be uncomfortable, but that's okay if that's something that persists in your work.
I think the whole idea of avoiding discomfort isn't very scriptural. When we talk about to mourn with those who mourn, well, that means I'm going to be mourning. I have to hear some things that might be uncomfortable. If I'm going to bear somebody's burdens, I have to know what those burdens are. And I think there's, yeah, I think there's a certain amount of discomfort built into discipleship. Who's against this? Who's not for this? And yet, if you bring up interfaith work, I don't know that it's high on everybody's list of stuff I got to get done in my religious life.
A lot of people like the idea of interfaith. It seems like a positive. Yeah, we should be talking to people of other faiths. But there's also people who, if we hold a very strong claim to truth and that's exclusive, my truth is the only truth and therefore no one else has truth, interfaith looks very strange to them. Or worries that if I engage in interfaith work by going to another religious service, if I'm reading someone else's sacred text, that's inevitably going to water down my own faith.
If they have better music.
If they have.
What are my personal, you know, temptations?
A hot take here, but, you know, I think a lot of traditions have better music than my own tradition.
100%.
And
yeah.
So what happens if I enjoy their music more than mine? Is that going to pull me away from my tradition? We worry about that as parents, as, you know, students. We worry about, am I losing something in the process? I think Mike's student evaluations show this every semester, that students love this and it strengthens their own faith. Mm-hmm. I think they develop a different relationship with God along the way that is deepened and isn't pulling away from their own tradition, but is actually deepening their appreciation for what God's doing in the world.
In some of those student comments, you get this coming through where there's these heartfelt things where they're like, you know, I think my life has changed. And to me, that's a big deal. They end up, instead of education being something that they can package, possess, and sell to an employer, their education has become something that they can embrace, and it changes their lives and turns them into somebody who can change the world and care about other people.
We've just been hearing from a whole party of people talking to us from the BYU Interfaith Student Association. Again, really impressive group of people who are earnestly looking to be better Latter-day Saints, better world citizens, and doing the work. And I think that's what's most impressive here. I think we often, when we work with young people, we think, well, we have to make sure all the details are in place and create an experience for them that's an amazing experience, when actually they have all the talents and skills to do that. And I love that these professors said, you guys are adults. Figure this out.
Yeah. And I was really, I guess, concerned with the idea that here's something that they may be doing to fulfill class assignments and get credit, but will this be a lasting lifetime thing? I have the impression that this is staying with these students and that they have stuck with the program and have big plans for the future because they saw how important it was.
I found that moment when Grace talks about, I walk into my own sacrament meeting after having attended all these other faith services and saying, oh, this is my home. This is where my identity belongs. And I love that tension in the discussion of, I want to reach out and I want to find out where else truth is, but also I love where I come from and I want to honor where I come from.
Yeah, both things can be okay and good. I found myself smiling involuntarily as I listened to a student saying that they had felt they were learning to see God everywhere. I love that. And then coming together with members of different faith traditions, that they could feel God smiling on what they were doing, on the actual physical work they were doing to address issues in the community together. God was smiling. I was smiling too. So I love that they felt that they had learned to become comfortable in spaces of other faiths. We can do that so easily with the minimal effort to just discover the humanity of our fellow humans and the commonality of our seeking for something spiritual and for hope, for peace, and to improve the world we live in. Thanks for tuning into In Good Faith. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Cap Perry, and senior producer Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Leah King, Katarina Martinich, and Ashton Rowan. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Daniel Phillips, and Carly Wilson. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, why not spread the word? Leave a positive comment or a review or share an episode that you'll find on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, on Instagram and Facebook at InGoodFaithPodcast. If you're a YouTuber, go to youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you'll join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith.